Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour has written a very funny and actually poignant book as well, Man-Made, A Stupid Quest for Masculinity. Joel Stein is our guest. Upon seeing the ultrasound and the obstetrician saying that he and his wife Cassandra were probably having a boy, had his first panic attack. He's picturing having to go camping, using a hammer, throwing a football, watching professionals throw footballs. He says he doesn't think of himself as a man so much as a person who happens to have a penis. If he got dropped on an island inhabited by a less technologically advanced society, he would be killed immediately for being useless. So he decided that he would go on this incredible adventure to learn about and perhaps become a modern masculine man. And he did amazing things. He did a 24-hour shift with LA firefighters. He went hunting for wild turkeys. He went to a Boy Scout camp. He rebuilt a house. He drove a Lamborghini. He did boot camp with the U.S. Army. He got a dog. And the adventures are in the book. He is, I should tell you about him, right? He's a columnist for Time magazine, and he writes a column that appears in the magazine every week. He's written 14 cover stories for Time. He's contributed to The New Yorker, GQ, Esquire, Details, Food and Wine, and the list goes on. And he has appeared as a talking head on any TV show, he says, that asks him. He taught a class in humor writing at Princeton and wrote a weekly column for the back page of Entertainment Weekly. Hello, Joel.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for all of your adventures. This is a very funny book. It's not just funny. I mean, there are things to be learned from all of it, but
More than funny. It'll make you cry. Yeah, no, it's more like, Shakespeare than just funny.
It's more like Shakespeare. Great. You were a kid. You know, it's amazing your childhood. I don't know if it was because of your mom or what, but
it was because of the 70s. Yeah.
It was the 70s. You were inside. You weren't a Boy Scout. You did play soccer, but when the ball wasn't around, I love this line, you picked the dandelions.
Yeah, my parents were kind of flummoxed by that. They, you know, kids who are kind of wimpy, they make play soccer. And kids who are very wimpy, they make play defense on soccer. But I would sit there on defense and pick flowers, apparently. And I don't think I was particularly interested in flowers. I think I was just trying to signal to my parents that I really didn't want to be there.
Right. So you weren't your typical American young boy. You had stickers?
Yeah. I had a glass animal collection, a sticker collection. I had an Easy Bake oven, which seems to freak people out, even though I think why wouldn't you want to make cakes in your own room? I don't see why that was a big deal. But yeah, I only listened to musicals until about junior high. I was a pretty wimpy kid. It was the 70s. There was a lot of Free to Be You and Me in my house. I was in New Jersey, and my mom was a therapist. So I think she was a therapist, was also big into the feminism movement. So I think all of that kind of weighed on me. But I'm also just born kind of wimpy.
But your dad was pretty tough.
Dad is pretty tough, yeah. My dad served in the military. My dad boxed in college. My dad played high school basketball. There's a part in my book, which is also my life, where I was down in Miami with my dad and my sister. And I brought them to the to the South Beach Wine and Food Festival. And we were in line for a crepe. And the line was really long. And my sister and I took off. And there was some guy who had cut to the front of the line, guy in like early 30s with two women. And my dad, it was 70 at the time, and he had those glasses that, you know, on a string that hang down around your ear.
Yeah, I know those.
Not an imposing figure. Yes, you're at NPR. Of course you know what those glasses are. They're littered all over here. And when the guy cut, my dad is very, like a lot of guys who like to fight, my dad gets very, very into line justice. If someone cuts the line, there's all kinds of injustices in the world, but line justice is the one that he fixates on. And so we told the guy to get back in line. The guy didn't move. And when my sister and I finally got back, my dad, who was waiting for a crepe, remember, and not a savory crepe, like a dessert chocolate crepe,
right,
is in the guy's face and calling him buddy. and his name wasn't Buddy. And he told, he said to the guy, let's take this outside. And my dad's 70, and the guy's 30. But my dad gets so intimidating when he gets angry. He hulks up that the guy said the wimpiest thing I've ever heard, which is, I'm a lawyer. If you hit me, I'll sue. To which my dad said, I'm a lawyer, one of the biggest firms in Manhattan. Let's go outside. And my dad's not a lawyer. The guy didn't go outside, but my dad physically blocked him out from getting a crepe and handed crepes to everyone else in line first. And he was a hero to the crepe line. But, yeah, I avoid confrontation at all costs. My dad got a different beast than he expected.
And would you be embarrassed by that behavior by your dad, or did you quietly cheer for him?
You know, embarrassed implies a level of calmness and masculinity that I don't have. I was worried. I was concerned, oh, my God, I'm going to have to go outside with my dad and fight some guy. Right. I wanted it to end. I wasn't embarrassed. I was just panicked.
So you didn't have any of those, and it seems like a lot of boys have these incidents where you're kind of bullied, or there's an incident on the playground, there's a fight going on. You just escaped all of that?
I mostly escaped that. There were a couple incidents early on, and then there was an incident in, like, high school where, I swear to God, I was in Long Beach Island, New Jersey, and this guy across the street called me Four Eyes, which was shocking. I didn't know people still did that. And the next thing I know, he had crossed the street, and we were fighting. And we pushed each other, and I knocked him to the ground. That's as far as I knew from fighting, was knocking someone to the ground. And then we stood up, and he punched me in the face, and I fell. And this happened several times. So it wasn't really a fight, because that implies that two people are fighting. It was like a half a fight.
He was fighting
you. Because I just got punched. Yeah.
Yeah. So going ahead, you get married to Cassandra, and she is pregnant. You think it might be a girl, but then you find out pretty definitely it's going to be a boy. And you really were panicked about that. You thought it would be easier to raise a girl.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I knew the stuff boys did. And I didn't know how to go camping. I couldn't put up a tent. I didn't even know the proper way. Even though I've watched baseball my whole life, I didn't know how to throw a baseball. Which, you know, I got this guy, Sean Green, who's a Major League Baseball all-star, to teach me the basics, just how to throw and catch and hit and possibly even assistant coach Little League. And I've watched baseball my whole life. I had no idea you put your fingers on the seams whenever you throw it. I think I would have noticed that. But, yeah, I didn't know how to do any of this stuff, and I figured I needed to go learn and fast.
I love the chapter with Sean Green, because Sean Green is really kind of a fellow soul of yours. He's a pretty gentle, sophisticated, intellectual guy.
Yeah, he's the one guy in the book who is very comfortable in the world of masculinity. I mean, he played baseball for decades, but he was most like me, and we still talk and hang out. But he, he's Jewish. He went to Stanford at the same time I did. And he's very into Buddhism, and he doesn't drink. He's never been camping. He doesn't watch sports. I think he drinks wine, but he doesn't drink. I don't count that. Mm. He was most like me, and he taught me that a guy like me can easily hang out with real men and not be judged. It's just that you have to have some interest in the stuff that they do. And I've been shutting down real men for so long, because every time they started to talk about football, I just was like, I don't watch football.
Right.
And it was my way of saying, I'm not interested in anything about you. Please get away.
Right.
From
what are you going to talk about if you can't talk about football? You
exactly.
Did do this, wasn't it, with Sean Green, where a lot of baseball players, what do you call it, dipping? Or you were chewing tobacco? You thought you had to chew tobacco.
I thought they were the same thing, too, but apparently they're slightly different. Chew, you actually chew, and dip, you just shove between your cheek and gum.
Oh.
But he's never done either, which is insane.
Right.
To go through baseball without ever having put smokeless tobacco in your mouth. So we were talking about this at a sports bar, and some guy overheard us and gave me Kodiak. And I took a little bit, and I put it between my cheek and gum, which I remember from commercials, and I was feeling really, really good about myself. And Sean brought me one of these little... because he's been in baseball for so long, he knew how to make these little, you get a styrofoam cup and you origami some napkins, and that's your little spittoon. So I was using my spittoon and watching a baseball game with a Major League Baseball player, feeling great about myself, when the Kodiak owner informed me that I had put about 1/99th of a serving into my mouth. So it didn't have that much effect. It's delicious, by the way. You think it would come in... It comes in flavors.
Really?
I thought it would come in... Yeah, I thought it would come in like tobacco or berry tobacco, but it came in wintergreen. Delicious. Like earthy and minty. Highly recommend it.
That's funny. Your wife, though, never complained about the fact that you were kind of wimpy, as you've described it. It was okay with her.
Well, she was an art major in college. A lot of the men she dated before me turned out to be gay. So the bar was low with her.
Uh-huh.
But even then, she'd be disappointed that I couldn't fix stuff around the house, or that when we lived in Manhattan, she did all of the mouse killing, which...
mouse killing. Ooh.
Oh, I hate it.
So do I.
But I should have done it. But I do hate it. It's awful.
Ooh, it's absolutely awful.
And it's guilt-inducing, and yeah, it's horribly disgusting and emotional.
Yeah. Let's talk about fixing things, because this is something that my dad did. By golly, he knew how to fix everything. And my husband's out of town, so I can say this now because he won't be hearing me. But he can't fix anything. And I can't fix very much either. And the boys in our house, some of them can, they're grown, but some of them could fix a few things. And
now, where did they learn that from, if not from their dad?
Well, they learned it from, I don't know where they learned it. They just sort of picked it up.
You should talk to your children more. You should find out these things.
Yeah. No, I should. How do you learn these things? And please teach me. Actually, it's something that we all ought to do, but it is interesting that we think about our dads being able to do this, and I sort of expect my husband to be able to fix things, and he doesn't know how to do that. I'm thinking in the back of my mind, you should know how to do this, right? But his dad didn't do it either. He didn't fix things. So, but you learned how to fix a house, which I think is really admirable.
Yeah, that was the thing I perhaps, other than hunting, liked the least. But it's one of the things that I've continued to do on my own.
All right. Good.
I've fixed my toilet. I fixed something in my refrigerator. Two things in my refrigerator.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. And the great thing is you will have sex that night if you do that.
Is that right?
Did you see the Mad Men? Of course you did. You work in NPR. Did you see the Mad Men where Don Draper's at Pete's party and the sink breaks? And the next thing you know, Don has ripped off his shirt and he's fixing the sink. There are no men who watch Mad Men, because they're all like me, had sex with their wife that night.
And I must...
Or if they did, their wife was thinking about Don Draper, for sure. But yeah, knowing how to do that stuff, being self-reliant. I had thought I was self-reliant because I had made money and I could pay a guy to fix my sink and my toilet.
Right.
That's actually not what self-reliant means. It means relying on your actual self.
You can fix a toilet. Isn't that, doesn't that make you feel good as a human being?
It shockingly did, and my son saw it, and my wife saw it, a lot of the stuff is super easy. If you just go to YouTube, you'll learn it. And the thing is, if you mess it up, this is the main thing I learned from my wife's dad in the 3 days I spent roofing and fixing this house. If you totally screw it up, you still just call that guy. Like you haven't made it worse. That guy will still be able to fix it. And your conversation with that guy will be much better.
Oh, that's funny. And by the way, just so we don't have NPR stereotypes, I watched Mad Men once because I feel to be culturally relevant. I had to. I never watched it again. I think it's boring.
You were going to lose your job. You can't say that.
Do you think so?
I just said it on the radio. That's really gutsy.
I watch reruns of West Wing. I'm serious. That's what I do.
Well, that's better. You saved yourself at the end. I thought you were about to talk about how you voted for McCain, but you came back safely with the West Wing, so I'm pleased.
You went out with some Boy Scouts early on in the book. You didn't even have a sleeping bag or a tent.
No, worse yet, none of my friends had sleeping bags or tents.
No.
So I kept calling people and asking to borrow them, although I wasn't sure if that's something that's too intimate to borrow or not. But I assumed it wasn't. And so, yeah, the two things I kept needing everywhere I went was a sleeping bag and steel-toed shoes.
Right.
Every time I did something, people were like, yeah, just wear some steel-toed shoes. I was like, why are men's feet in danger at all times? I did not get that. But, yeah, those are the things I needed.
Yeah. Did you like sleeping outside?
No.
No?
What? No. Like, that's why people built, you know, went to caves originally. No, the difference between sleeping outside in a tent and sleeping outside without a tent is indistinguishable. Like, yeah. I don't know how the tent industry has pulled the wool over the world's eyes. Like, you're still cold. You're still sleeping on something hard. It was awful.
And you were with a lot of 11-year-olds, and they were vomiting, and then you didn't sleep, and you probably wake up, and you don't feel very good.
Yeah. I one of the first thing I did just as a warm-up was I became a Boy Scout, which I hadn't done. Because my mom wouldn't let me join the Boy Scouts because she said it was a fascist organization,
no.
Which she still believes. So she was disappointed by many of the things I did. Like, I fought this UFC fighter, Randy Couture, for one round, and my mom just doesn't understand why anyone would fight. Like, she didn't understand why I couldn't walk in a ring and just discuss our issues together.
Right.
So yeah, I flew in the face of much of what I was raised to believe for this book.
The chapter that really was one of my favorites, actually, was the firefighters chapter. There was something, I mean, it's something odd about the camaraderie, but there's something about the friendship that they have with each other, masculine guy-guy thing that it is, that was kind of endearing to me.
I love those guys. Like, mm-hmm. I'd always avoided all male situations, like fraternities or... I just think when any one group that's too similar gets together, there bad things happen. But I went to the firehouse, and it was like the nicest fraternity in the world. Firefighters are pretty special people because, unlike cops who, you know, enjoy confrontation, firefighters really don't. I mean, their only issue is with the element. Like, when you call a firefighter, you want them to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You're happy to see them. And that's kind of... They operate kind of under that principle. So they're extremely, obviously, brave, but they're also just super helpful, nice people. And all the guy stuff we did, I really, really enjoyed. Like, after we made dinner, they had a contest to see who would clean the dishes, which is something women would never do in a million years. They would have, like, a little chart and whose turn it was and yell at people about missing their turn. But no, the men had this game that took about five times as long as cleaning dishes would take. And it was so complicated. It involved basketballs. And it was so, so complicated. And at the end, after the losers were determined and they had to go clean the dishes, we just all cleaned the dishes together.
I love that story.
It was great.
You were a little worried about your wife meeting the firefighters because many of them were quite handsome.
They are. I don't understand why we only let good people fight our fires. Like, it's not like being a restaurant hostess where it's like, oh, not, no offense, but not that crucial a job to our society. If you want to only pick attractive people, go ahead. Firefighting. Very important. I think you'd want the best firefighters, but instead we seem to pick them by how handsome they are, which I don't think is smart. So yeah, I would never, my wife will never meet those guys. I don't care how much our house is on fire. She will never, ever meet those guys.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our guest this hour is the author of Man-Made, A Stupid Quest for Masculinity. Joel Stein is our guest. Joel is the columnist. His humor column appears in Time magazine every week. Started it in 1998. This is a book that, you know, about manliness in masculinity. He didn't mind being unmanly until he had a son, and he was not... He was not your typical boy, if there is such a thing as being a typical boy, but he says that almost all his friends in elementary school were girls. He had no matchbox cars, no dirt bikes, never climbed a tree, built a fort, or broke a bone. He had, I love, this is really telling, an easy bake oven. So when his son was born, he decided that he would have to learn some of these skills, and he set out to do just that. And the book is filled with his amazing adventures. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now for Joel Stein. His book is Man-Made, A Stupid Quest for Masculinity. We start with Rich in Sullivan. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I was wondering if your guest had anything to say about Mr. Rogers. And the reason I ask about it is I taught at a post-secondary level for most of my life, but not in the university, at a vocational adult college. And when I'd refer to Mr. Rogers, I'd frequently get disbelieving looks that anyone would allow their television to be tuned to Mr. Rogers. It was sort of like you were condemning boys in your house to a life of effeminacy and disdain and sort of disregard by true men. I always found that really odd because some of the most heterosexual men I knew didn't fit the stereotypes that it seemed these people wanted to cultivate. And I was always kind of bewildered by this fear that Mr. Rogers was going to turn young boys into homosexuals, which I assured them didn't work that way. But I just wonder if the guest has anything to say about Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. Well, first of all, none of the men I met in the book who were super manly, whether they were the president of the UFC or Warren Sapp, the NFL player, fit our stereotypes of a man. They all had something in their life that would be considered, you know, 20 years ago to be gay or effeminate. But Mr. Rogers is I had no idea was such a divisive figure until I was in high school. And I wrote about this when Mr. Rogers died in Time magazine. But I had grown up loving Mr. Rogers. I had all the albums. I was super into that show, as you can imagine. And then in high school, I was at a party, and there was this drunk guy, huge guy. His name in high school was the Buddha. Not because he was wise, just because he was huge. Huge kind of scary guy, lots of chains around his neck. And he was drunk, and he told me this story about how he and his equally tough brother would watch Mr. Rogers as kids and love it, and their dad would catch them. And the punishment was that they had to, like, he locked them in the closet or something for a short period of time.
Oh, my goodness.
But they kept watching Mr. Rogers, and I don't know why. I mean, I know why he chose to confide in me, that, you know, because I was obviously the kind of kid that loved Mr. Rogers. But it was this heartbreaking story, and I had no idea he posed that kind of threat to men worried about their kids being gay. But yeah, that definitely exists, and it you know, it's weird because I wrote this book from a very specific perspective, which was someone who grew up with liberal parents who were very comfortable with me being not stereotypically masculine. And I think this book is somewhat offensive to people that grew up with dads who locked them in the closet for watching Mr. Rogers, who can't really relate to where I'm coming from. I think how I grew up is becoming more and more common, but there's still plenty of people who grew up in a kind of with scarier dads and in a more oppressive household who are really offended by my adventures.
Yeah. Oh, everybody should be acquainted with Mr. Rogers, though, right? No matter, he was just a wonderful man. What a contribution. We have to get to football, too, because we will in a moment. We have a lot of phone calls, but remind me, we got to get to football.
All right.
I really don't like football.
It won't take very long. I know about 30 seconds worth of football knowledge.
Okay. But you met some interesting characters in that realm.
I did, yeah.
Josh in Milwaukee, hello.
Hi. Wow, this is a great topic. I really think you're going to touch a lot of people with this. First, I just wanted to say, do you think that humanity's original setup where the men as hunter-gatherers would protect the hold and provide food for everyone, if and how that plays into a modern society's current image of, like, the man of the house, where we kind of have some of these latent, you know, psychological traits from, you know, that kind of play into the current image.
Yeah, it is. There's a study I just read this week, which I wrote about in my Time column this week, from a journal that comes out in July, that showed that women at the height of their fertility cycle are more attracted to stereotypically masculine men. So I think it's definitely in our DNA. It's in that Mad Men episode. And I found in writing the book that some of these things you just can't escape from. I know that we get less manly every generation. Most of our dads were more manly than us. Most of our grandfathers were more manly than him. If you go far enough back, if you believe the Bible at all, men spent most of their time going to the town right next to theirs, killing as many people as they could, enslaving the rest, and grabbing the women as, like, spare wives. So yeah, due to technology and kind of intellectual progress, we've become less and less manly over time, which is, you know, 95% an awesome thing. And 5%, we lose some of that self-reliance and that confidence that comes with doing, being self-reliant, really.
I like what you, when you talked about, and I wonder if it's mostly men who give us this, if it's our dads who give us this, if you learned how important this was. When you talk at the end of the book, about your dad giving you the very manliest gift, and that is the gift of feeling safe, and you want to make your son feel safe as well, and you think that now, as a result of all of this, you might be a little bit more capable of doing that.
Yeah, my dad made me feel kind of safe and protected in really every way, and that allowed me to take a lot of risks, which I really appreciate. Some of it was stuff, you know, that my grandfather started this business that my dad worked in that was a family business, and I kind of knew in the back of my mind I always could get a job there. So that let me take a lot of risks. He made me feel physically protected. He made me feel fiscally protected. He made me feel like he was giving me the skills I needed to deal with the world. And he really, you know, what I forgot until I started doing these man ventures was that my dad had tried to teach me all this stuff. Like, he sat there and taught me how to change a tire. He taught me, like, I remember working in the basement with him with a vise and him teaching me how to use tools. I remember even trying to teach me how to fight on like 5 or 6 occasions and where to put my thumb. And I would just giggle the whole time. And no one wants to teach. If you want to get someone to stop you from teaching you how to fight, just giggle. Like, that ends the whole thing pretty fast.
Yeah. How old is Laszlo now?
My son's 3.
He's 3. So he's still pretty young for you to be teaching him some of those things. But you will do that?
Yeah, you know, he's not that young to teach him some of these things. Like, he really wants to sleep outside. Like, he brings it up all the time. And we'll do it. We'll sit in the backyard. It's getting a little warmer out even at night. I would have been kind of avoiding that before I did the Boy Scout thing. He's, you know, we wrestle all the time. And I just try, I'm trying to get in his head that, like, it's not too scary and it's okay to get a little hurt and stuff like that.
Hmm. Thanks, Josh, for the call. Let's go to Cookie in Milwaukee. Hi, Cookie.
Hi. Joe, I've been getting Time magazine since 1961 when I graduated from high school. But your column is what I look forward to after all of these years. I save it until last.
Aww.
So that I can just guffaw and hoot and sometimes even giggle. And I want to say that, you know, you sound very masculine. Your voice has a lot of inflection and you sound like, you know, like you've got some gravitas. And I just wanted to call and say thanks for being so funny. Thanks for getting all those experts and kind of, you know, making fun of a lot of things. And just know that there's, you know, somebody out here who just thinks you're the greatest.
Oh.
You're a he-man, Joel.
Oh, Joel.
Well, don't let Cookie go. Keep Cookie on the air. What are we doing? Cookie's a great caller.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more from Cookie.
Thank you, Cookie.
Is there any way Cookie can get her own show on the air? I think you guys consider her as a host at least.
You definitely need her email address so she can send encouragement all the time, right? Are we going to talk about football for a moment? Because I don't
get... No, let's ask Cookie.
You want Cookie? She's gone.
Oh.
You encounter this guy, and he's a complicated guy, and I'm wondering what he taught you about your masculinity quest here, and I just want you to talk about him because he's interesting, and his name is Sapp.
Yeah, Warren Sapp is not only a Super Bowl-winning football player, but I believe he won Dancing with the Stars as well.
Oh, he did?
I believe he did, yeah. He's and that's one of the few manly things I have going for me is I don't watch Dancing with the Stars. But he told me he won, and I looked it up, and it seemed true.
Huh.
He is an enormous, like, 300-pound-plus man who taught me how to watch football. And we spent a Sunday watching football, and at some point he showed me something on the screen, and then he slapped my ass. And I did not know how to react.
I bet.
It was...
Right.
Yeah. I don't know if you slap back, if it's like a high five... And what I learned is that while slapping a guy's ass is very manly, getting slapped, not so manly.
Ah,
Yeah. That was one of those. But he is a complicated guy. He just went bankrupt since I've written the book. He's writing his own book that's coming out this fall. He had a couple, his marriage fall apart. And when I asked him what had happened, he told me that when he was away for games, he would call up this woman and she'd fly to wherever he was. They'd order up their favorite foods and then have freaky sex, which was all going fine until he got her pregnant. And so I said, wow, that must be hard to explain to your wife. To which he said, no, it's hard to explain to your wife when you get a second woman pregnant.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, he's got a complicated life, and he's a super bright and funny and energetic guy who's just kind of fun to be around, but a really divisive figure in football because he would play the game very violently, and he would taunt his opponents. One way, if you're a big man, one way I learned that you taunt people is by doing seductive dances in their faces, which I know wouldn't work for me, but apparently worked for him all the time.
Now, is there something hyper-masculine about football? I know you said you went to baseball games, but you didn't know much at all about football. So is it because it was hyper-masculine?
I think so. I mean, although I like hockey, which is kind of masculine, but it's different. Football's super violent, as we're learning more and more.
Right.
With all these concussions and the long-term damage from the concussions. And, he explained to me that football, people say that it's a brotherhood. And he's like, it's not a brotherhood. It's more like war, in that if one of your teammates falls to the side in a practice, he's like, you just move the practice a couple feet over. You don't, like, help him come with you. You leave him behind. And I thought, wow, that is a tough sport. And I think kids who play that sport learn a lot of really, really great lessons. You know, I think if before this concussion stuff, I would have encouraged my son to play football.
Really?
Not that you can control what your son does, obviously. But yeah, I would have been pretty happy. But now the concussion stuff does obviously concern me.
Yeah. Colleen is next. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. I wanted, first of all, to thank you. This is a great program, and I wanted to just mention my kind of a similar but counter experience. I'm a woman who just gave birth at an older age to, I went to get my ultrasound. When I found out it was a boy, I cried. And it's because of all these issues, because I didn't know how to handle how to raise a boy. All I know is being a girl, and yet I'm a, you know, Title IX child of the 70s and 80s, more of a tomboy girl. But I thought, okay, here's my chance to have a girl and express my whatever girl is inside. I need to bring her out now. And when I had a boy, I just realized I freaked out. I didn't know what to do because I wanted, if it's a boy, I wanted him to be like you. I hate football, and I don't do all these other things. And so I had a moment there. So I'm glad to know that guys like you are out there. Glad to know there is a guy, unlike my husband, who doesn't like football, because we've got all the boy stuff going on. Now I find myself wanting to nurture a person like you.
Well, I had a boy. I had some of those, all those concerns. And then I had a boy who, I remember the first time he crawled into my lap as I was going to show him a book. I was like, oh, boys can be super affectionate too. And I've already, despite this whole book, I've already got him singing show tunes from Singing in the Rain. So yeah, you can... Kids like musicals. You'll be fine.
Yes.
You'll be okay.
Yeah, we're having a good time so far. Lots of hugs and kisses because I hope he grows up and is one of those nice boys that some nice girl in high school will appreciate.
That's such damning praise. Could you imagine? No one wants to be the nice kid in high school that some nice girl appreciates. That's the kid that doesn't go on dates.
You know, he's actually too cute for that. It'll happen. I might have to ward off the opposite effect.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Like Colleen a lot, but she is no cookie. Let's face it.
Listen, we'll get you in touch with Cookie. I think I know Cookie. So, we will. We'll have her boost your ego, your manliness, your feeling that people appreciate you. Yeah. Cookie, thanks for calling. Now, let's talk about, there are a couple of things I really love in life, and one of them is dogs. I really love dogs, and I know you took in a dog in Montana, but I don't fully understand why you gave the dog back.
Because you shouldn't keep animals in your home.
Oh,
seems to be a basic rule. You were freaked out about the mouse? The mouse is like a hundredth of the size of a dog. Oh, there's nothing grosser than keeping a dog in your house, which I'm sure I'll have to do because my son, my manly son, likes dogs. So eventually he'll convince me. But yeah, I never understood dogs. That's an animal. You have to pick up their poop, right? You walk behind them and pick up their poop?
I know. It's a weird thing to do. You're right.
My wife, but if on our first date she had told me that for the rest of our life I'd have to walk behind her and pick up her poop, there would have been no second date. I do not get the whole dog thing.
Well,
but I will say that dog people are insane.
Right.
I got a day trader to give me $100,000 of his own money to trade in this book. I got the UFC to let me fight one of their fighters.
Right.
I got the Army to let me do 3 days of actual boot camp and fire a tank.
Yeah.
A very expensive thing to do, fire a tank. The hardest thing to set up in this book was getting an adoption agency. By far the hardest thing, seriously, was to let an adoption agency let me foster a dog for 2 weeks. It was amazing. It was like, they were too worried about the dog and it being disturbed. I'm like, this is a dog that's going to be killed if I don't take it. And they're still like, I don't know if we want to do that to the dog. Oh, those women who run pet adoption agencies. People talk about strippers and porn stars having bad experiences with men that lead them to their vocations. No, it's the pet adoption women who have been really hurt. They do not like men.
Oh, my. We may get some response to that. Well, I think you should try the dog thing again because it's really good for... They say it's true, though. It's good for children.
Yes, and I know. Because they take care of something. I know.
Yeah. And you need to bond with that dog. I found it humorous that your wife was saying you don't pet the dog very much. You have a dog for that kind of physical contact.
But then you have to wash your hands right afterwards,
don't you? No, you don't. Wash your hands.
Then you have dog on your hand.
I know, it's a dog. They're loving. They're kind.
If you had a
They're
goat around and you touched a goat, you'd wash your hands after, right?
I don't know. I never had a goat. But
that's correct, because you don't keep animals in your house.
Okay. Let's go to Barbara in northern Wisconsin. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hey, wonderful program. I have a my father who would take me to my ice skating ice skating lessons and my tap dancing, whereas my mother had absolutely no interest in this type of thing. She was more of her parents had owned a small hotel for immigrants, so she was always focused on, you know, the business, the plumbing, and things like this.
Oh.
But my dad, when he first came to this country, he was a wrestler and a boxer, but he is the one who gave me the confidence that a man had this, special attitude toward young girls to teach them how to be proud of themselves. And it was my father who gave this to me.
Oh, where did he come from, Barbara?
He came from Finland.
Oh.
He was a Russian Finn.
Huh.
Did he meet her at the immigrant hotel?
well... Somewhat, he had been a sailor, to survive, but it is this man who had to go through so much, but he also had that the finesse to give his daughter his attention, and my mother had absolutely no interest, but my father did.
Hmm.
And there is a man who is very sensitive to the arts, and and he gave me that special gift. So I'm all for men who are very sensitive.
Hmm. Joel?
But it's good that he's very sensitive, but he also had all that male wrestling immigrant hotel living stuff to him. So I think it's good to be balanced that way.
Right. Thank you, Barbara, for the call. More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this hour is Joel Stein. His book is Man Made, A Stupid Quest for Masculinity. Our number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org, or you can leave a message on the Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Joel Stein, our guest, and we are welcoming phone calls for him. John in Antigo is our next caller. Hi, John.
Hi. I'm Dave. I'm a
I'm sorry, John. You're a manly guy whose phone is really bad. So if you could call us back, we just
I think John's calling from Underwood, some submarine or something. I think that's very manly.
Yeah, call us back, John. It's just we won't be able to hear what you're saying.
He sounds like he's calling from like a payphone at an immigrant hotel, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
Doesn't sound like he's safe. I think he needs help.
He does. John, find another phone. Thank you. We have to talk about being a soldier. When you called, you referenced this earlier, but when you called the Department of Defense asking if you could do this kind of work for a while, they said okay.
Yeah. I mean, I thought that was going to be kind of impossible. I wanted to do 3 days of boot camp.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And the next thing I knew, the Department of Defense had all of the branches compete to get me to go to their branch. And I was getting emails from General Mark Hertling, I was getting emails from a general who I believe is now, he emailed me recently. I think he's the Allied Supreme Commander of Europe or something.
No. Oh my.
He is in charge of Europe in some way. He's emailing me and he's making jokes. He's like, I heard you're talking to the Navy. I thought you wanted to be a man. And then a smiley face. There was a general using emoticons. And I thought, oh my God, that's the branch I'm going to do. The branch that uses emoticons. And then I was getting such good offers from like the Marines and other people that he upped it and he offered to let me fire a tank, which they've never let a civilian do. In fact, Donald Rumsfeld had a rule that civilians couldn't operate any kind of, you know, dangerous machinery in the Army, which is a good rule. But apparently people didn't really like Rumsfeld, so as soon as he left, they, like, ignored the rule. So they let me fire a tank. But, yeah, the boot camp was pretty – it's pretty amazing. It's physically difficult, but emotionally just impossible. It's so stressful. People scream at you to, like, urinate faster. They scream at you if you look up or talk while you're eating. They're just constantly in your face. And you know that they're putting on an act, but it's like a haunted house. It's still scary. And, you know, I could leave, obviously, at any point. And it was only 3 days. And I can't imagine doing it for real. I think it's an amazing experience. And everyone I talked to was glad they did boot camp. But every one of them said that if they could have legally quit at some point, they would have.
Huh.
And so, yeah, one of the conclusions I took was there's a difference between happiness and fulfillment. And that there's all the things that I've really appreciated in my life and that I'm glad I did and that I look back on fondly aren't usually the things that made me the happiest. They were often the things that were the hardest.
Mm. Oh, that was deep.
That's what we do in NPR.
Some of the times we do. Yeah. John called back. Hi, John.
Hi, I lost you there.
There we go. You're better now.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that. What was the one word next to time described to be a manly man? Because I was in the infantry, I'd run heavy equipment, and I don't know how to fix anything, but I consider myself to be manly. What's one word that would describe it? And to reflect on what you're talking about, Mr. Rogers, I think Mr. Rogers was a badass because he was a Marine sniper, and he had tattoos for both that are very manly.
Wait, Mr. Rogers was a Marine sniper who had tattoos?
Yeah.
I think, is he confusing him with someone he knows named Rogers?
I think you must be. That sure
is
wasn't
that true?
The Fred I know.
I remember reading that amazing Esquire piece about Mr. Rogers. I don't remember that fact. That's amazing.
Yeah.
He wanted one word? He's so male and reductive, isn't he? He wants my book down to one word.
Right.
That's very... No woman asked me that. What's the one word your book means? Not reading two words.
So,
one word.
So what is it, Joel?
Busy man. One word? I'm going to go with self-reliant.
All right.
But he was probably unhappy because that's hyphenated. He wanted like a short word, right?
It's hyphenated.
Something from the old
English. Hyphenated. Sorry, John, we just did. I'm not sure where you were going, but we got to go to Kevin. Hi, Kevin in New Berlin. Hi.
Hi there. I was just calling in more or less. I like the program. I can kind of call in more or less as a comment. I can kind of relate to everything that's kind of going on. I grew up in a household where my mom was the one that, quote unquote, wore the pants in the family. And my dad was the one that was a stay-at-home dad, cooking dinner, grocery shopping, doing laundry type of thing. And I kind of similar to what the guest is talking about in terms of growing up not really doing a lot of sports, not really doing a lot of manly things, but then later on in my life, I find myself in, I work in an industry that's very blue collar, so I've been, you know, trying to get more involved with these types of things, sports and fixing things and hunting and fishing, especially I live in the Midwest, so you got to kind of talk about that stuff in the industry that I'm in. And even my wife, her family that I married into, very masculine family. Guys are, you know, big hunters and fishermen, so I've been finding myself having to adjust my lifestyle more and more each year. Pretty interesting.
What is this industry you refuse to name?
It's the plastics industry, so very blue-collar kind of industry, manufacturing.
You know, I knew all that stuff about Kevin just when I found out his name was Kevin.
Oh, come on, Joel.
Didn't you, though?
Kevin's an Irish name. I thought about naming my son Kevin for a while.
Really?
Yeah.
But you didn't. That's the difference.
But I didn't. Well, that's because there were a lot of other guys in the household, and they said their immediate response was, oh, no.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't. Thank
you. Conan's an Irish name.
Yeah, that's true. So Kevin is doing a similar thing to what you were doing. That's interesting, isn't it? He's off to, you know, learn about sports and play sports. And
just to keep up with the plastics guys.
Keep
yeah.
up with the plastics
I had no
guys.
Idea. Plastics was such a manly industry. Weren't you expecting to say, like, steel worker or coal mining? And he went
yes.
with plastics.
Yes.
It was a little disappointing.
Thank
Tupperware.
You, Kevin. I like your name, Kevin. I like your name. Jennifer in Madison. Hi.
Well, hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Okay, how are you?
Good, good.
Good.
Joel, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm actually a mother of a young boy who is just finished up his kindergarten year, and society is already telling him that the way he behaves as a male isn't fitting into the stereotype. He's being called a gender variant child. And this is nothing new to myself and his father. And we support our child 100%. We love, love, love him for who he is. Couldn't care less if he wanted to play with Barbies. My question is how do I, what was your experience? I know you were saying that your parents were very accepting. But what would you recommend in helping my son be who he is through this gender stereotyping that is so, so small for males?
There really is. I mean, the window is so much larger, I mean, than it was a generation ago. Well, first of all, you should talk to some other parents that have kids who gender variant. I've never heard that.
No, I haven't either.
Yeah. But you can tell super early whether your kid is gay or not in some basic ways. And, you know, at least in L.A. and San Francisco, I'm sure out there, people are so much more accepting now, but it's still obviously really hard. And I've talked to other parents who had figured out really young that their kids were gay or even transgendered and how they dealt with it. And some schools and some parents are so good at dealing with this now. And it really, I mean, kids can be cruel about anything, this no more than other things. But if it kind of comes from the top down that this is all okay, people can deal with it a lot better. So it depends what school you're in and what the other parents are like. I grew up in the 1970s in New Jersey, and people were much more accepting. Obviously, like, it didn't let me be one of the cool kids, you know, the jocks, but I never felt shunned or different, and it really worked out well for me from where I grew up and what my parents were like.
Thank you, Jennifer, so much for your call. Well, we have to say goodbye, but I thank you so much. I really had a good time, and I think you're very funny and quite perceptive, actually, and I hope that Cookie will become a lifelong fan and friend.
Yeah, the two of you were awfully nice to me. So yeah, I will come back to your or Cookie show anytime.
You will?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Thank you. Joel Stein, our guest this hour. Joel's book is Man-Made, A Stupid Quest for Masculinity. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our studios in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. Thanks for listening.